This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is 7.36 in the morning on Friday the 12th of July. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where, Sharit, you speak with Sinan Ismail. He's the CEO of Digital Durian.
Yeah, so Digital Durian is a homegrown animation studio responsible for that hit children music-based cartoon, Didi and Friends. I don't know if you've heard of that. So they're very popular on YouTube. So I will be discussing with Sinan on the local animation industry here in Malaysia and what's next for the studio.
So that's going to be coming up after the 8 o'clock news, so be sure to stay tuned for that. In the meantime, on the international front, the French Senate has just approved a digital tax yesterday, and this means tech companies that make over 750 million euros globally and 25 million euros in France will be taxed at 3%. This naturally includes Alphabet, Apple, Facebook and Amazon, as well as companies from China, Germany, Spain and the UK. But the US, of course, is absolutely jumping for joy.
That's right, because a lot of those tech companies are from the US and less money there. So US, of course, US President Donald Trump has criticized the tax, claiming that it is unfairly targets American companies. Now, he has reportedly instructed his most senior trade officials to investigate the French plan. It would be, you know, a similar investigation framework as the one that US used in its trade war with China.
U.S. officials are also weighing its options for retaliating, including imposing tariffs on Paris. And Amazon, of course, has applauded the Trump administration for taking decisive action against France. It naturally echoed the U.S. government's sentiments that the tax was discriminatory.
Now, but France, however, has said that the tax is completely compliant with international agreements. The French finance minister, Bruno Le Maire, he expressed the hope that France's digital tax will be an incentive for countries to find an agreement on the international taxation of digital services at the OECD level. And this is going to be quite an interesting development. It's going to be interesting to see how this affects the conversation about digital taxation on the international level, because this is the frontier that the governments are now trying to deal with, right? How do you tax services like Apple, like Netflix? Mm. These countries that we are also talking about this here in Malaysia.
Yeah, you think about it, right? Especially like, let's say, cloud services. Mm. That's kind of up in the sky, literally, mm. right? So you hire all these companies, or you pay them for these services, for a service that you use in United Kingdom, but these other companies, like your likes of Amazon and Microsoft, perhaps they're not registered in the UK, mm-hmm. or they're registered in another jurisdiction, like in the case of, let's say, a lower tax country, like maybe Ireland or Luxembourg. Mm. So yes, your revenue that Amazon is making in country A could be as much as 1 billion, but the tax it could be paying could be very much smaller. So I think the European Union is trying to close down these gaps.
Yeah.
And as far as a digital tax goes, the UK could also be next, because on Thursday they published a draft legislation proposing a 2% tax on revenues from British users of social media, internet search engines, as well as online marketplaces. Now, aside from that, in other international headlines earlier this week, the Trump administration announced a significant relaxation of its restrictions on US companies selling to Huawei, saying the ban will only apply to products related to national security. So on Tuesday, Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary, said that Washington would issue licenses to companies to sell their products to the Chinese telecom equipment maker under certain conditions.
Yeah, and he also added that the U.S. Department of Commerce will issue licenses where there is no threat to the U.S. national security, but clarified that Huawei would not be removed from the so-called entity list and that companies would still need to apply for a license. This new relaxation is suggesting that others who make products products in the U.S. will also be allowed to do so, though it is unclear if companies such as Intel will be allowed to sell programmable chips using the 5G mobile network, or if those products will be deemed sensitive to national security.
So for more on this, we have on the line with us Brock Silvers, Managing Director at Kai Yuan Capital, which is a China-based investment advisory and fundraising firm in Hong Kong. Thank you for joining us, Brock. So what is the extent of this national security ban that Trump's administration has imposed on Huawei?
We really don't know what the standard is right now, and that's part of the problem. You know, at first we were told that the ban, essentially the blacklist, had been lifted and that Huawei had been removed from the entity list. That was not the case, and later we were told the ban had only been lifted for some non-essential components, which the market assumed meant some low-end phone chips and so on. And then we were told that nothing had really changed from before the G20 in terms of how export approvals were being made. So it's quite unclear right now. Wilbur Ross made a statement yesterday, and it's possible he opted for a case-by-case review in order to spare the administration a political embarrassment if they had to openly end the ban. But look, there is one important impact that I think we'll definitely see. The U.S. had been pushing allies all over the world to blacklist Huawei as a security risk. And by keeping Huawei alive, the U.S. has now sent a message that security risks are negotiable in trade deals, which means I think the global ban will be much harder to either achieve or enforce.
What about the timeline of this ban? Has there been any indication of how long this entire ordeal will last?
Everything connected with the entire Huawei situation, I think, is completely fluid right now. You know, we're not sure what the exemption may or may not be. All we really know is that the two sides don't seem particularly close to an agreement, which means I would say that Huawei's troubles probably aren't over, and Chairman Ren Zhengfei, if I were him, I wouldn't make any non-refundable vacation plans just yet.
Now, how related is this entire ordeal to the ongoing U.S.-China trade talk? And do you foresee further changes to the ban should the trade talks falter?
Look, if there's a trade deal, Huawei is likely going to secure access to U.S. components and suppliers, but 5G will probably still be an issue. I think that's a legitimate concern, and the U.S. is unlikely to significantly back down on the 5G end of that equation. But if trade talks go south, I would expect that any Huawei exemption, to the extent that there is one now, will probably be ended. And unfortunately, I think this is the more likely scenario. I would say the near-term odds of increased tariffs are probably better than the near-term odds of a broad-based trade deal. And Huawei, thus, is likely to remain on the front lines. And let's not forget that in the coming months, the U.S. is likely to begin prosecution of Huawei's CFO, the chairman's daughter, which I think will fairly inflame matters.
Now, Brock, how does this curtail China's 5G ambitions going forward?
You know, the odds are that the U.S. is eventually going to significantly curtail Huawei's 5G's ambitions. But we really don't just know it yet. The thing to keep in mind is that Trump entered the G20 with much stronger leverage than Xi Jinping. He had Xi and the weak Chinese economy over a barrel, so to speak. Yet somehow Xi left the meeting with two of his primary objectives fulfilled, and he paid a very low price for it. He received a six-month truce on new tariffs and a reprieve for what looked like a likely Huawei death sentence. But after the G20 and the post-G20 environment, either Xi misinterpreted Trump's intent or maybe Trump has just had second thoughts, and it looks like the Huawei reprieve may not hold. So we don't know exactly how that plays out in terms of Huawei and the global 5G rollout. We do know that it honestly hasn't been the Trump administration's finest moment. I think in the end, Huawei survives, but the global 5G ambitions are probably going to have to be scaled back fairly significantly.
Thank you so much for joining us. And that was Brock Silvers, Managing Director at Kaiyuan Capital, a China-based investment advisory and fundraising firm in Hong Kong. And he makes the point that actually this concession that Trump has made may make actually the global ban more difficult to enforce in the longer term, because it shows what the message that it's sending is that security risks like these are perhaps negotiable when you've got trade on the line. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.